right. So my next guest on the Back to School podcast is Nick Cree. Now, Nick is the host of Business Owners Smashing It Online, and he's an AI and automation expert. He comes from a web development background, and that's where we first met at a WordPress conference, I think about 8 or 9 years ago now. So Nick, in his weekly show, gets a lot of questions from people that are over 50 in business, and obviously he's got a lot of tips and tricks and the new tools and everything that comes out every week. But the question that we have for Nick today is, what do over 50 business owners struggle with specifically, and what can we teach the kids at school, or what do we need to teach the kids at school to help them with it? And I think that you're a over 50 business owner yourself.
Am I? Yes, I think
I
am.
Now, but, tell me about, I guess, the podcast first, and I guess how do you transfer that into clients for your business is something that I'm interested in as well, because it's great that the kids are getting these skills, but no one's teaching them how to monetize these skills that they're getting from using AI is the thing. So that's what I'd be interested in finding out from you.
So the podcast itself is, it's a free podcast. Well, it's a live show, actually. Mm. And we've always got a guest presenter on, and I talk about, I was going to say, some of the AI tools that are available for businesses now. That's actually morphed. It was just apps and tools that are available on the website. Mm. Now more and more of these are AI tools. To the point where I was just reading the other day that these apps and tools are probably going to disappear in the next 2 to 5 years. Yep. Because we've got these large language models that will take the place of developers creating the tools. Yep. So being in business, there's probably a couple of streams. Like, I'm an over 50, would you believe?
Yeah.
I'm an almost 60. And I've got an innate curiosity about the tools that are out there, how to use it in business, and I'm not shy about adopting, you know, and exploring some of the new tools. But on my show there, we've got a range of people there, and certainly there are some that know that they need to be able to use some of these new tools and processes and strategies that are now available. But there's also a bit of fear around it, in the sense, not that they're afraid of them, but this is a whole new learning curve. Mm. So AI is supposed to be taking the, supposed to be making things easy. But the reality is there's a perception there's a whole lot to learn with it. There's actually a lot less to learn with it than people think. Mm. They're really just designed to, if you think about, say, the large language models, they're really designed for you to talk to, whether that's typing or speaking, and it comes back with an output or some answer. So you think about that from a old school way of doing things, which was, creating an Excel document to do some analysis. So that required a specific set of skills. These days, you can do that in a tool like ChatGPT or Copilot, and it will take you a fraction of the time to do it. But I think so. Part of the issue is that, how does this thing actually work underneath? And as someone in their 50s or 60s, used to working things through, these things actually just give you the answer. Mm. Without having to understand how it gets gets to that point. Mm. So I think if you are growing up into that environment today, the real risk there is that you actually don't have to do any thinking. You can actually just use these tools without understanding underneath how these things are actually working, or how they arrived at the output or the answers. Mm. So one of the risks around all that is that potentially people are getting dumber. Mm-hmm. Because they are not using their sort of critical thinking, problem-solving skills that, some of the older generation, I say older, this is me, that we grew up, sort of understanding. Like, when I went to school, it was like understanding first principles of mathematical equations. So even though we didn't need to know it, we had to understand first principles. These days, you don't even need to know that. You can just pop in what you want the outcome to be, and you will get it without understanding how it got there at all.
And I guess it comes down to the outcomes that you can actually tell it, have an Excel spreadsheet or something like that. But when I'm using it to write first drafts with blogs and everything else, it's like it surveys the whole internet of data points. So it's kind of like getting business advice from a winner of a reality TV contest because it's the most popular opinion.
Mm.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the best. And there's been a lot of criticism with AI for people not actually reading through it and editing it. And it even says in a disclaimer down the bottom that you have to check stuff there as well. Now, they've just released ChatGPT 5.0, which is better at analytical skills and all this sort of thing. But I've noticed that its default setting is like an insecure, employee that you've trained to do stuff, because it does a little bit of it and then says, is this what you want? Or check back, it gives you a first draft of a part of the project before it goes into the full-on outcome production. Is this something that you see is a benefit, or is this to make, is this to get over the fears of people not checking stuff? Or is it, do you think there's something there that it just wants to limit the amount of processing people because they're trying to put in too much and trying to do too much at once with it?
I think it's saving money for these large language model businesses that have got huge computing power, and they just choose for a lot of resources. So rather than wasting a whole lot of time on an output there that is not quite right, it's stopping to check it. So I think that's the first thing. It's a financial thing. Mm. But the process there, I think fundamentally is a good process. And when I talked about, people are sort of losing the faculty for critical thinking, this helps to bring that critical thinking back in again, because you've got to go through and check the result and see whether it's actually on track with, what you're expecting it to do. And if you think about how these language models are trained, they're trained on all that data out there. So you said that, it goes out to the net, it goes in, it can crawl through all of the websites that are available publicly out there, and a whole lot of information probably isn't available publicly as well too. Mm-hmm. So essentially it's just a really enormous data bank that can access information at speed, compile it, and then give you an output. But here's a problem, and this is where critical thinking really comes in. Is if you think about how people are using, let's say ChatGPT, for instance, they're using it to create content. So like blog posts or social media posts, which goes out onto their websites to publish. Now, sometimes people don't even check it. They will just publish it without any editing or checking. Other people will do some editing and checking of it, but here's where the problem is. So that information is now out there to be crawled by the search engines and by the AI engines as well too. So now it's been fed information back into the system that it outputted in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've got this loop of information so going out and coming back in again. So if it's not true, or it's got some inconsistencies or things that are incorrect in it, now it's going into the machine fundamentally that this is correct because it's out there on the on the net, and it's probably got a range of other sources that it has generated as well. So then my question is, how accurate? So at the moment it may not be a problem, but you think about it in as generations of this go along, and a generation can be sort of a couple of months. Yeah. When do we start getting information spat out that is incorrect, fundamentally incorrect, because it's learning off itself rather than learning off data that humans have put into it?
Mm.
So the critical thinking comes in when you need to read what comes out and then analyze what comes out to see whether it actually matches what your experience is and what you're expecting and what you think it should be, rather than just accepting it. 100%. Yeah.
So this is where it's coming into that. What you mentioned that that you've got this feedback loop where garbage in, garbage out, and the garbage is coming back in, then it's causing problems there as well. I gave your prompting framework, which was basically a lead gen tool, but it was good for the kids at school to know. I was teaching them how to use ChatGPT, not to cheat on their assignments. If they just put their assignments into ChatGPT, it's not going to give them the answer. It's going to over-explain things because it thinks that they're stupid and they don't know anything. If you ask a question in the workplace, you expect a direct answer. If it doesn't know, it does something which it feels it must give an answer. And I mean MUST, which is make up stuff too. Which I think that this is where ChatGPT doesn't show the expertise, and it takes a bit of a while, particularly with new disruptive technology. Now, disruptive technology gets people back to the job to be done. That's the whole premise of the theory of disruptive innovation was developed into what's called job to be done theory of innovation, which is that people don't buy products, they hire it to do a job. So is all these tools and tech and tips that you're giving away in software, is it a case that what of these technologies would you, what of these products would you actually hire, and what job would you hire them to do? I guess is another way of asking, what is the software that you would use in regards to all this sort of stuff? Is it all the new stuff, or do you use software and then work out what its full potential is and then just focus on that? You know, do they need to get different software? Do they need to get all this different stuff that you're putting out there on your website each week?
That's a good question. I mean, I profile at least five tools a week on my program. And I would say that I use not many of them myself personally. Mm-hmm. So I profile them to see what the use cases and what they do. Fundamentally, some of them are the same. It's like, you know, you've got different badges on that effectively do the same job. But it really comes down to a question of how is this really going to help you with your business? And it's not just the job that it does, but what is the output that it's going to give you, or the result that it's going to give you? Is it going to give you as good as or a better result than what you're currently getting at the moment, in a time that is quicker than what you can do, and accuracy that is more accurate than what you can do, or it's as accurate, but it gets it done a whole lot quicker. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so fundamentally, I use just a handful of tools. Some of them I've used for, quite some time. Others are, reasonably newer, like ChatGPT. That's only been around for about 3 years, publicly available. That's a tool that I've adopted. Mm-hmm. But, if you look at things like, say, Google Workspace or the whole Google environment, that's a tool that I've used for probably 15 years now. So it really comes down to what is actually going to sort of do the job and get the results that you want. And the other thing I would say too is that how you use the tools are all important. So you talked about people asking questions and getting answers out of these let's say AI tools. I actually think that's the wrong way around. I think if you're using these tools like a search engine where you're asking questions and looking for it to give you results, today it's not just giving you a range of results; it's giving you an answer. So you don't have to think about it anymore. You're getting an answer. But if we've got these feedback loops of information out and information in, then you don't know whether the answers are going to be helpful, useful, or even true at all.
So it's still a skill to use it. You just need communication skill.
Well, I think if you turn it around and think about rather than asking it questions, get it to ask you questions. Mm. Now you've got something that is going to be a far better tool for you, to help you with your own analysis and your critical thinking and making decisions that you need to make in the business world and in life as well too.
Particularly new products and services, because you could get it to form the persona of, you've got enough content out there that it could say, what would Nick Cree think of this? And it would come up with some stuff like that. But if I ask you directly, you probably would come up with a whole bunch of different stuff, because it doesn't have the personal empathy and feeling and all this sort of stuff that you do. But it has the cognitive empathy, and I think, realistically, on the balance of probabilities, Nick would probably say this, but it's the 10% that it doesn't sort of do.
Yeah.
But you mentioned about, I get people say, can you train me how to use AI? Now, to me, the whole point of AI is that you don't need to learn how to use it. It's intuitive, and that's the whole point of AI, is that you don't need to learn how to use it. You need to learn why to use it. And I ask the question to someone when they say, what training do you think I need? And I say, I don't know what training you need, but let me ask you a question. What would make your life easier? And then they come out and they say, you can teach kids to do this, you teach kids to do that. Okay, so you want me to train you how to employ kids coming out of school? And they go, no, I don't need help with that. But with ChatGPT, is it a question not, can you train me how to use it as AI? Is it a more valid question in that case to say to them, what would make your life easier? And that would guide you as to the AI that you would suggest to them.
It would. And if you think about the shortest occupation that ever lived in this planet, it was a prompt engineer.
Yeah.
And that was there from about 2000 and was it 22 to about 2024. And then you don't hear much about prompt engineers anymore. Why? Because now you can just ask the machine
to do the prompt.
To do the prompt for you. You ask it, if I want to get this result, what are the prompts that I need to get there? Mm. So yes, there are some cases for prompt engineers, but essentially most people can get the information out that they want. So it depends on what you're asking, how you're asking it, and more particularly, what is the outcome that you want for yourself? So you asked about, will this make your life easier? So you need to define what easy is and what it is you want. So then you've got an end point, and then you can work from your starting point, which is now, and ask it to close the gap for you. And so you can find a process there to help to close that gap between where you are now and where you'd like to be.
And another one that I commonly get is, I want to help people. Mm. Okay, and it's like, okay, so why? And I ask him, and it comes from Simon Sinek. Whenever he gets someone that they start wanting to work for you, and he says, why do you want to work for me? Because I want to help people. But you can do that with anyone. Why do you want to work with me? How is that going to let you help people? And sort of drills down into it, because I do this sort of thing. Read my book. So you're not telling me selfishly, what do you want to get out of this? And this is something that I think that with a lot of networking that we do, you give before you get, and it's not about you and all this sort of stuff. Do you think that the kids, that they know how to use the technology, they're trying to use it, do you think that it's just that what they can selfishly get out of the over 50 business owners is the strategy and the theory behind why you do what you do? Because we probably know that, whereas they've grown up with the technology, so they don't know what jobs this technology has replaced, because they've grown up with the iPhones and all this sort of stuff. So do you think that that's something that we can look at with what the over 50 business owners are looking at doing? And is that something that we can explain why they use AI? Is that something that you think might be a realistic possibility?
Well, I think that, if you think of people that are in that over 50s market, they're there with a whole range of skills. And along with those skills, they've got a bunch of experience through life as well too, which now brings them to a point where they make the decisions that they make now, and there are decisions that they say, no, that's not the right thing to do. You don't know why it's not right, but their experience of from the past there says, no, this I'm not doing this because this doesn't work. It looks like it works, but it won't work. Mm. So if you were to use AI, then you sort of think about, if you're an over 50s business owner, What are the skills that they've learnt along the way, the experiences that they've had that have led them to get the results that they are getting today? Mm. And as someone in their 20s, they have no idea what someone in their 50s is thinking. Mm. They might think they do, but they've got no idea because they don't have all the experience in behind them that got them there.
They've gotten more than they probably know what they're thinking.
Conversely, someone in their 50s knows what someone in their 20s is thinking. Mm. So because they've been 20 before. They may not have been 20 in the environment context that we've got now, where they're growing up with all of these devices, but they've got a memory of what it was like in 20. So you've got that breadth of experience. But if you're in your 20s and going forward, you don't know what's out there because you haven't experienced it yet.
Yeah, haven't had the real world experience and actually using it. 70% of your knowledge comes from actually doing it.
Yeah.
And this is where I say to them, well, if you want to learn how to sell, start selling. And they say, well, what do I sell? And I say, well, what do you like? Mm. And they go, well, what's that got to do with it? It's like, well, yeah, it's the easiest thing to sell is something that you're passionate about and you're involved in and going with that. So is that sort of thing that it's a case of you want to learn how to use AI? Well, what do you like? What do you like doing? And is that something that you find with a lot of the people that have particularly come along and appear on your podcast? Are they looking to learn about AI to use it themselves, or are they looking to use AI to think, well, I could use this, but I don't want to do the legwork and be doing the day-to-day stuff? How is what you do in actually regards to business owners? You're not just setting up websites for them anymore. You're using there's platforms that can do that and this sort of thing. So how is your business changed, I guess, with the invention of AI? And how does it make it easier for you to serve the clients is something that I'm interested in.
Things have fundamentally changed very quickly and quite rapidly. So I no longer have a digital agency, a traditional digital agency, building websites, WordPress websites, which is what I had. Now I've got an agency which is all about AI and automation, and I know that I can get a website built just by getting an AI machine to do it. It will do it. And I know what to what to give it in order to get the output that I want.
And all this sort of thing. Yeah.
But here's where I think the biggest opportunity is right now for anyone that is young, that is wanting to work with or understand with the over 50s market, and that is voice AI agents. Mm. Now, so your established business owners out there know that it's important that they have them, but they don't want to learn how to train it, put it all together to go and deploy it. Mm-hmm. They know they need it. That they like the concept. They need someone to do the execution of it.
Yeah.
Now, I can tell you that it's not, although it's fairly straightforward in terms of some of the logic there, there is a bit of code involved with it.
Mm-hmm.
So we haven't got away from entirely doing everything code-free. And some of it are still drag-and-drop platforms, but you need to connect platforms with each other and understand APIs. So that's really the language that people need to understand now, is how to work with APIs, so that they can implement or put together these systems in order to give to a business or someone in business. So fundamentally, I think if you're prepared to learn how to put these things together, how to put these AI agents together, and I'm just using that as an example,
mm-hmm.
and you can deploy it for a business, then you now have a sellable skill. So that's about being an implementer.
Mm. So can you just explain to me what an API is? This is where, I know what it does, but what is the basic principle of what does an API do, is I think, to get them in the right direction, first of all.
So you would think about an API being, it's really just a way of communicating, with two systems.
Yeah, two softwares can use, like a common language.
Yep, so they can be written in a different code base, but with an API, they can actually communicate with each other. So that
kind of like a translator.
Exactly. well, those old telephones where you get a two tin cans,
mm-hmm.
and you get a string and you tie it between these two tin cans and you stretch it tight and you can talk in one and you can hear out the other.
Yep.
The API is that bit of string.
Okay.
So, mind you, a lot of the kids won't understand what that is today, that's our toys.
That's another one there, but at least the business owners might understand that sort of thing.
Mm.
But making it as simple as that, I mean, people would say, oh, yeah, but that didn't work. But you said something key, which was you had to pull the string tight, and then the vibrations would transfer along.
Yep.
You get a big loose string, then you wouldn't
hear anything. It wouldn't work.
So this is an indication that, when you explain things simply for it, is it a case that both sides aren't explaining things simply enough, do you think, or do they understand how the processes work simply, and is that a barrier to communication, do you think, between the, we essentially need an API between the over 50s and the under 25s.
Pretty much,
So, ChatGPT can do that. Can you get into arguments with ChatGPTs? Can you say to it?
Oh, you can do that.
under 25s are lazy, come up with arguments of why would I think they're not lazy. Is that sort of something that we can use AI to sort of create these effectively de facto APIs for humans? Mm.
You could get some understanding of the two different age brackets using that. But again, I wouldn't be asking it. I'd be asking it to ask some questions of me. So as an over 50, it's like, why am I the way that I am?
Mm.
It's like, ask me some questions about... I was born in the 1960s. Ask me some questions about how I developed my mindset the way that it is.
Mm.
And so then you'll get it asking you probing questions. Then do that the same. So if you sit down with an older person, a younger person, asking those same questions, now you start to get some understanding about how we think.
Yeah.
So
useful tool if they always say in an interview, do you have any questions? And they go, no. I see the greatest benefit is in that, yes, kids have grown up with the Internet of Things and AI integrated technology, but they don't know where theory comes from or why it was invented.
Mm.
I think that's where the over 50s can sort of say, well, back in our days we used to do this. But isn't that a bit boring for them, do you think? Do they really want to know where it comes from? Is that something they need to get over?
I don't know whether it's boring for them or not. It might be a perception that's boring, but when you get into it and start to learn about it, all of a sudden it's not boring anymore. But I think it's if you don't know why you're doing something, then it's hard to get any sort of motivation to keep doing it. Mm.
Especially if they're just doing it because they want to make money.
Yes.
Yeah, there's other ways to make money these days.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's lots of, and in fact, you can use AI to make money without you having to do any work. So, you know, you've got those there. But, you know, is that what you want to do? Maybe it is, but maybe it's not. And what really fulfills you at the end of the day, and what really is going to keep you interested in doing what you're doing your own life. Like, if you imagine, what's the utopian world there where everybody's just got leisure time and nobody works? Well, that's going to get boring so pretty soon, because what are you going to do with yourself? And if nobody's working, then where's the leisure stuff coming from? So someone's got to be there to create the leisure stuff in order for you to enjoy it.
I saw a post on LinkedIn from Angus Keck, who's a guy I've known from Ag Unity for a while, and he was making the comparison of AI not to Terminator or this sort of stuff. It was to that movie WALL-E, where they're all going around in the chairs, and at the end of it, they got out of the chair, and the big overweight guys that never stood up, standing up on wobbly legs and all this sort of thing. And this is what he sees as more of a comparison of where AI is taking society rather than the fear factor of the Terminator and all this sort of stuff. But at the end of the day, the Terminator was actually reprogrammed to do good in the future episodes of that movie as well. So this is where I guess it's a case that AI is a very personal thing. It's a personal choice as to whether you use it or not and what you use it for. So if people want to explore using AI, obviously the podcast, but how can they, if they want to work with you, how can they get in contact with you?
Our best place is to Google my name. Mm-hmm. I am all over the web. LinkedIn or Smashgo. If you go to smashgo.co, you'll find me there. But LinkedIn, you'll find me, or just Google my name, N-I-K-E. C-R-E-E.
It's not only just about using AI, it's what's financially viable, and you come from a banking...
I had a mortgage broking finance background. Yeah.
Okay, so return on investments and all this sort of stuff. So with the amount of free stuff, what are the costs of using AI, particularly the free software, do you think, in regards to, do you have to know how to use it, or the cost of your time? I say business owners, is it sometimes cheaper just to get someone to do it?
Oh, it's definitely cheaper to get someone else to do it that knows what they're doing.
Yeah.
So if you can get someone that knows how to use the tools, then that is going to be way cheaper than learning how to use the tools, even though some of them are quite intuitive. Mm-hmm. But the skill is being an implementer, understanding how to implement.
It's great to talk to you. Always great to catch up. I know you're a busy man. So if they want to get in contact, you can jump on every Tuesday night, Google him, Smashgo, Nick Cree.
Business owners smashing online. You'll see that out there too.
There we go. So you can catch up with Nick there. Jump onto his podcast. You can ask him questions. I see people doing that all the time. And if you want to get in contact with Nick and look at doing, you know, finding out how we can implement this stuff for you, that's why he does the podcast, you know, to educate and give people back. But at the end of the day, he's a business owner as well, and this is where he makes the money out of actually implementing stuff for people. But he also trains you how to use it as well. So chat with Nick about that. All right. Thanks for listening into the podcast, and we'll see you on the next episode.